This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Hutchins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Maddie, what are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
Pleased to have with us on the AA Podcast, former NBA champion, slam dunk champ, currently an NBA on TNT and NBA TV analyst, Brent Berry. Brent, welcome.
Thanks.
First, let's start with your second career in television. Obviously, analyst work is in your blood with your dad, Rick, and brother, John. Was that always something that interested you whenever your playing days were done?
Yeah, I think so. I think early on when I was growing up, it was kind of fun when my dad would have a game to call and, you know, get an opportunity after his playing days, certainly to go and hang out at the arena and watch a game and have him be courtside to do what he does in his own particular sort of way in that. And then to, you know, at some point have an NBA career followed by the opportunity to keep talking basketball. I look at it, Matt, as a great way to avoid real work. that's what I'm going for there.
That may be one of the most honest answers we've ever had in the 100-plus people that we've interviewed here. It's one of the most honest answers we've ever had, I think. As far as making that transition, what have you found to be the biggest enjoyment in working in television and the biggest challenge? Do you enjoy being in the studio more, hosting some of the highlight shows on NBA TV, or do you enjoy getting out to doing the games? And which part of that job have you found the most challenging so far?
I'm kind of enjoying every aspect of it and learning a little bit about that side of things. But I guess the one thing about working for the Turner Sports Company, as we've seen on Thursday nights, you can kind of get away with saying and doing just about anything. There's not a lot of editing going on there on the TNT side of things. But the job at NBA TV is great. There's a great group of former players, guys that I played against and guys who I respect their opinion, although not always in full agreement with them, just to talk hoops and try to carry people through what is a long 82-game season and do it in a way where we provide some analysis and at least some bit of entertainment and something for people to watch. Difficult side of things, I don't know, maybe being there for as long as a night might take, you know, being there for 7 or 8 hours as I'm waiting on the East Coast for games on the West Coast to finish up. Sometimes the nights can get a little bit long, but like I said, I mean, being there and having a chance to watch the great players that are playing today and analyze what coaches are doing and how the game is shifting, it's really enjoyable. It's kind of just in the blood.
All-Star Weekend, of course, coming up. You're a veteran, not only of the dunk contest, but the three-point shootout. How did you prepare for those events? Is it something you put a lot of time into as a player? Are you maybe even more nervous given the spotlight that's there and the individual nature of it? Just what goes into the preparation for these individual events, All-Star Saturday night?
Well, being that they're individual events, Matt, I think that it comes down to what it is guys feel they need to do to best prepare. So it is an individual thing. There's always help for young players, and seemingly the dunk contest is always young players, where your teammates tend to get involved and come up with ideas to help with maybe some of your creativity and bolster your confidence that you can go there and do certain things. So I remember back, it was 96 for the dunk contest. In my first year, I was just a rookie, and I was just doing things that I knew I could do, and didn't practice a ton for it, but maybe the 10 days leading up to it after practice would take some time, and Bill Fitch would let me do that, maybe sneak behind his back and get a few dunks in to get myself ready to go to the dunk contest and have some fun. The three-point shootout's a little bit different in that it requires you to have somebody, you know, help you set up the rack, get yourself situated around the line, get the clock in the practice facility up and running so that you make sure you're taking all your shots. So that requires a little bit more assistance, but it's definitely good to get some rest in before you get to the big stage and have an opportunity to try to get hot and put on a show.
It seems like, Brent, we always go back and forth each and every year. We play this game of ping pong between the dunk contest is dead, time to get rid of it, 1 year, and then the next, the dunk contest is back. So where do you fall in that argument? And is there something that we could do to make the dunk contest more valuable year after year? Or, you know, is it just a predicament where we've seen all the dunks we need to see, and maybe even – especially the field this year, maybe the three-point shootout is the main event now for All-Star Saturday night?
Yeah, I agree with the three-point shootout this year with the collection of marksmen should be the last event this time around. And I think there are ways that you could kind of, in terms of how you proceed through the night with the schedule, to make it a little bit more of a build-up to the three-point shootout and have the dunk contest happen in between a three-point shooting round, then the dunk contest completes, and then the finals of the three-point shootout happening. The dunk contest, I think we're just very desensitized. Like, how many things can guys really physically do anymore that we haven't seen either via somebody's Twitter account or a quick line or on YouTube or something like that? We see just about everything that happens, and most of the things that we have a chance to see are in-game and are so incredible that you just can't believe you got to watch it more than one time. So when you get to the NBA dunk contest, there's a great deal of desensitized to what it is that could be spectacular on a Saturday night. And I don't know if, to be honest with you, I don't know if Charles and King and those guys doing the dunk contest do it the service that it should have, in that you can't keep comparing it to the 80s. You know, it's 30 years ago that Michael and Dominique were battling. That of course, those were great competitions. But there's been a lot of great dunks. There's been a lot of great dunkers over the last 20 years. And, you know, tonight sort of should be just a celebration of what it is that those guys can do. So one of the things that it suffers from is that it's always being compared to those days. And we're not there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and so it should just be enjoyed in a little bit different way. And hopefully this year, those guys, Zach and Victor and Giannis and Miles, will put on a great show.
All right, let's look at this three-point shootout field. Thompson, Curry, Korver, Matthews, Bellinelli, Harden, Kyrie Irving, J.J. Redick. Let's say you have to take one shooter out of that bunch. Which one is the best pure shooter of that group, and why?
Well, I mean, it's tough between Kyle Korver and Steph Curry to choose one out of being the best pure shooter that the game has. Steph is different in a way. He's the best pull-up shooter off the dribble, creating opportunities with the ball in his hand. And obviously this competition is more an exhibition where he's grabbing balls off the rack, and I'm sure he'll do just fine. Kyle's a much different catch-and-shoot player. I think over, you know, maybe like 96 or 97% of his threes this year have been on assists where he's relying on the pass. So I'm talking more game time. You can't get any better than those two. But for this event, I mean, these guys all have a chance to just get hot and, have a night where one guy out-duels the other. And would it be far-fetched that Wesley Matthews shoots the ball on Saturday night and he takes all these guys down? Absolutely not. Kyrie's won the competition before. Can he get in his rhythm? Sure. Steph has been in the competition before. I know he's upset with the way he performed the first time around. And then Marco's won it last year. So it's going to be awesome. There's a lot of anticipation, of course, for this group of shooters. And what I hope is that, you know, every year there seems to be one guy that gets on a roll. This year, potentially, there's all of these guys to get going to the point where the crowd is hollering out the score, getting up out of their seats, and really enjoying the exhibition.
And really, Brent, the three-point shot has become such an influential offensive weapon, and it's growing in importance. You see so many of these top teams now relying more and more on the three-pointer. Do you think that's a natural evolution of the way the game has gone, and maybe teams getting smarter, figuring out shooting efficiencies and stacking their rosters with three-point shooters? And do you think that's a good evolutionary step for the game? Is the product with all these three-point shooters and maybe some higher-scoring teams out there, is it better for fans to watch now with such an emphasis on long-range shooting?
I do, as long as the shot that's created is still within the rhythm and confines of the offense. It's not to say that the two-point shot has gone the way of the dodo bird, but it certainly, as we've seen over the past, the course of 10 or 12 years of study, that it's just way more efficient for a guy, instead of taking a, you know, getting a 55% mark at the two-point mid-range level, to step back and shoot 33% from three to produce more points. So the numbers dictate that it's a smarter play and a smarter shot, and the offense also, if you have guys that are capable of spreading out to the three-point line, especially the evolution of the four-man and the stretch four position, that you're going to open up driving lanes for the guys to create either A, opportunities at the rim, where guys shoot a high percentage normally. Two, you're going to get teams in foul trouble where you'll find a way to the free throw line to shoot, you know, efficient free throws. And then lastly, create more opportunities, again, at the three-point line with the accordion-style defense, sucking guys in, finding another pass, putting guys in rotation, and playing two-on-one on the weak side. So I think it's I've enjoyed it. I actually, you know, I'm a little upset that I'm still not getting a chance to play in the way that guys are playing now. It would have been a lot more fun than suffering through the late 90s and early 2000s when the game was making change from the hand check rules to more player movement. But certainly the inclination to move out to the three-point line, to take early available good three-point looks, it's been exciting, and I tend to like it.
Hopefully the next generation of Barrys can benefit from that, Brent.
Yeah, we'll see.
A couple first half of the season storylines before we let you go. Golden State, Atlanta, some of those teams with deep roster three-point shooters. Can that style succeed in the postseason? I mean, we've seen them rack up regular season victory after regular season victory. But when it comes to a gritty, hard-fought seven-game series, do you think that those two teams right now, the top seeds at the moment, do they have enough to get through one of those tough series, say against a San Antonio or a Cleveland, a Chicago, teams like that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Matt. I would just point back to what it is that the Atlanta Hawks were able to do as an incomplete team last year against the Indiana Pacers. Mm. You know, a grinded out defensive team, the number one team in the Eastern Conference, and Coach Bud getting that team minus Al Horford into a situation where they were playing a game seven and a chance to knock off the number one seed. I guess the one thing that I look at, the difference between Golden State and Atlanta, if you want to think about how legitimate their runs could be in the playoffs, is simply between the two of them, which team has more depth. And to me, the Warriors have a complete second unit where, you know, Atlanta comes off with guys who you hope are shooting the ball well. Guys like Mike Scott have to knock down shots. Kent Bazemore playing a defensive role, he needs to contribute some offensively. Schroeder's got to make shots as the backup point guard in Atlanta. Whereas at Golden State, you have veteran players like Andre Iguodala who comes in, Sean Livingston who can produce points, Leandro Barbosa who can come in and get you 10 quick points, and of course David Lee with him being back in the lineup and a way to Steve use him off the bench. There's a lot more complete secondary rosters on the Golden State Warriors team to be able to combat anything that happens with their first units, because they're so reliant on their first unit that if they get main guys in foul trouble in Atlanta, the bench is going to have to be relied upon. But to think that the style of what it is that Atlanta's doing, or what Steve has been able to do as the coach of the Warriors this year, won't translate into what they can do come playoff time, I mean, you'd be silly to think a team that's going to have that kind of success in the regular season doesn't have a legitimate chance to represent its conference in the finals.
All right, last question. I know time's almost up here before you go. Greg Popovich getting his 1,000th win. Obviously, a former coach of yours won a title there in San Antonio with him. His cat and mouse game with the media is one of our favorite topics at Awful Announcing. But you look at his career and his accomplishments, I think it's almost impossible to oversell what he has done with the Spurs. And it really, in the history of the NBA professional sports, and really a guy, maybe because of that relationship with the media and, you know, always giving the attention to his players and not really being very loquacious in his responses with the media, maybe someone that doesn't get a lot of the credit that he deserves for putting that team together, for coaching that roster, and for winning so many titles. So as a former player of his, what is the one thing that we don't see day to day that makes him so special as a coach? What is it that makes Pop tick?
Well, I mean, it's hard to really put it on one thing, but I think the accountability that Pop makes sure that guys understand when they step into the practice facility or onto the court wearing a Spurs jersey, the accountability not only to themselves but to the rest of the team is probably what stands out most. One of the things that I appreciate so much about Pop is his ability to understand how each guy on his team ticks. He takes time to personally get to know you and to understand who you are, what you represent, what's important to you. And there aren't a lot of guys, I would tell you, Matt, over the course of Pop's tenure in San Antonio that you could look at that don't have, the kind of, I guess if you look at, they look at the way life is, they don't have, the priorities for them are all set in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And Pop has a great way of grabbing guys and putting guys on his roster that understand the priority of basketball in their lives. They have a responsibility to the team. They have a responsibility to the organization. They have a responsibility to him as the head coach and the rest of the staff. But really, the place that basketball fits in their lives, they also have a responsibility to understand its importance. And that's one thing that I think if you talk to a lot of ex-players or current players that had the opportunity to play for Pop will tell you that he tries to get across to you. But he also understands that you understand that already, and he makes sure that he reminds you of that quite often throughout the course of any given season.
All right, great insights. Our thanks to Brent Berry for joining us on today's podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Berry3, and check out NBA TV and TNT's All-Star coverage all week long. Brent, thanks. A pleasure, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Sounds good, Matt. I appreciate the time. I hope you enjoy all the All-Star festivities.